live video topping the charts, except on Hulu? Are you better off publishing your own enhanced ebook? And grandpa's pirating movies for the U.S. Armed Forces? All that and more on this episode of Behind the Video.
This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information. Hello and welcome to Behind the Video, episode 0.1. This is a show that will take you behind the video, literally. We're going to look at the intersection of technology and pop culture and how some of these great videos you're seeing online get out to the public, and maybe we can all learn something about how our own videos can do that. Joining me is my partner in crime. The band is getting back together, Tim Street. Tim, how are you?
Hey, doing well. Lon, it looks like you've got a whole NASA setup in your basement there.
I have built the this crazy dungeon lair studio,
and Mission Control.
Mission Control. It is a work in progress. As you can see, I have a green screen up, but I'm a little fuzzy, so I've got to get some more lights and some other junk in here. But we didn't want to hold up, you know, the quality content that we will provide to our audience, who I'm sure is very eager to join us. We might actually be joined in a little bit by Goldie, right?
Goldie Chan maybe join us. Also, possibly Bernie Sue, who has a new web series that seems to be doing really well on YouTube. It's called Lizzie Bennet, and it's a modern-day takeoff on Pride and Prejudice. It seems to be doing pretty well.
It sounds pretty interesting, so I look forward to seeing what they have to say. Now, Tim, you were over at Digital Hollywood recently, and I think it just ended, right? Was it just the other day?
Actually, it's going on today. I'm playing hooky as well, but I was there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week, and there's quite a few interesting things going on. The buzz that seems to be happening in Digital Hollywood, one, a lot of the people who are investment, the VC, venture capital folks, seem pretty excited now. I guess the Instagram purchase by Facebook for $1 billion has really excited the VC crowd in the tech space. So there seems to be a lot of activity there. And the things that a lot of them are excited about seem to be the second screen experiences that people are doing on tablets to be able to watch a TV show and interact with the community that's also watching the TV show. And there's quite a few competitors in that space, but that's one of the things that was pretty exciting. The other thing is live television, doing stuff live on these new connected devices, similar to what we're doing right now with Justin TV and with Google Plus Hangouts. But also in the live arena in terms of live broadcasting big events, because that's the one thing where you can pull an audience together. And, you know, it's one thing to get them to watch television, but it's another thing to get them to watch on these connected devices. And, you know, in my day job, that's pretty exciting to hear because, you know, I work at MDialog, and we enable the seamless advertising into these new connected devices. So whether it's the iPad, iPhone, Roku, Xbox, those anything that's connected to the internet that can receive a live HLS stream seems to be the way to go and what people are excited about. So I'm happy about that. And then the other thing that people were talking about a lot were ebooks, and how with ebooks there's going to be an opportunity to really, you know, get independent content out there. And if you were listening to Marketing Over Coffee this week, John and Chris over there were talking about how it really doesn't make sense for an independent author right now to go with a publisher because of what you'll walk away with. And they gave some interesting stats as to, you know, how much money you would make with a traditional publisher versus doing an ebook by yourself. And for me, that's exciting to me too, because I really like the idea of doing an enhanced ebook with video and photos and that type of thing, and being able to sell it on iTunes.
And how does the marketing work with that? Because one of the arguments that publishers make is that, you know, for authors that aren't known, maybe, you know, for the Stephen Kings of the world, perhaps they could go off on their own. How do you get yourself out there without the publisher's marketing muscle? I mean, granted, the 70% royalty on the book sale is certainly something I would want to do. But, you know, is it hard to market in this new environment?
Well, the interesting point, and both Christopher S. Penn and John Wall over at Marketing Over Coffee bring this up, that you know, with these book publishing deals right now, if you're a new author, the publisher is going to ask you, what are you going to do to market your own book? So these big publishers aren't spending any marketing dollars on new authors, and they're asking you to market your own book. So really,
it's there anyhow.
Why would you want to go with a big publisher if you've got to market your own book anyway?
And how do you get to the level like a Hunger Games thing? I mean, is it part of it a good story and part of it how you market it? I mean, what are you planning to do when you publish your book?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is reaching out to your social network. I mean, you know, taking a look at what David Meerman Scott has done with his, you know, his publishing endeavors. You know, he does have a publisher, but he spends a lot of time speaking and reaching out and tweeting and doing stuff in social media to educate people, you know. So I think if you're out there, you're talking, you're meeting folks, and you have something interesting, I mean, whether it's a fiction book or if it's something educational, you know, it's really about reaching out to the right people and the people that are interested in that. And, you know, with social media right now, it's so easy to find that audience that is targeted as to what you're looking for. I mean, you know, go look on LinkedIn and see if what LinkedIn group is there that, you know, is interested in the subject that you're writing about. Go to different forums, join the forums, but just be careful that you don't do a seagull.
A seagull.
Yeah, seagull is when you go into a social community, you take a poop and leave. that's a seagull.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, when they first get into social media, they don't realize that they're doing that. They're like, hey, look at my book. But it's kind of, you know, it's cocktail party rules. You don't walk into a cocktail party and start handing out your business card.
You get to know people.
You listen to the conversation. You offer something to the conversation that advances it without drawing attention to yourself. And then if people find your comments interesting, they'll go look up who you are. They'll find your website. They'll see your Twitter stream. And there they'll discover what it is that you're writing, what it is you're promoting, because you're allowed to do that on your own blog.
And it seems like branding now, we're finding this with some of the local content we're doing here in Connecticut, is that the brand and the person are almost interchangeable now, right? That there's almost this synergy between what you're trying to sell for your content and you know, essentially what you're trying to, who you are. That is almost interchangeable. And I think big publishers and big broadcasters probably are pretty concerned about this, that they're focusing on the social aspect so tremendously in such a tremendous granular detail now, it looks like. So do you think some of the bigger players are getting threatened by the fact that, you know, you and I can broadcast from my basement lair here?
Well, I definitely think it's something that they're concerned about. You know, whether or not they've seen a big, you know, difference in it already, I'm not sure. But you know, when I'm talking with different folks from cable networks that are out there, they're concerned. I mean, the one thing that the cable networks really have going for them is sports, live sports.
Right.
You can't really get that over the top with maybe the exception of Major League Baseball is something that, you know, you can pay a lot of money to have your Major League Baseball app on your iPad, but it's not, you know, it's not on YouTube yet. You can't get Major League Baseball on YouTube.
Oh, I think we just lost your audio, Tim.
I actually turned it off because Gardeners just came out.
Oh, well, our
so
viewers appreciate
that. That's okay.
That's okay. That's very good. Yeah, my water heater might come on down here, but I think so far we've been okay. So if you hear some background noise, you know, it's all the 0.1 beta testing going on here. So we appreciate you sticking by us. So, well, Tim, anything else from Digital Hollywood, or you want to move on to our topping of the charts section?
Let's move on to the topping of the charts.
All right. Well, we're going to top the charts here, and hopefully one day our podcast will top the charts. But what we're going to do a little bit here is look at some of the things that are trending out there that are popular, that are big network productions, because quite frankly, they're still getting more viewers than you are. So we want really to start looking at what they're doing and how we can apply that to some of the things that you might be doing independently. Topping the box office this week is Think Like a Man, The Pirates, Band of Misfits, The Hunger Games is still hanging on. And, you know, The Hunger Games, Tim, has actually been an interesting phenomenon. It started as a book series and it was tremendously popular among young girls, which I found to be pretty interesting given the subject matter. There's been a lot of fan-made videos that popped up long before the movies were even in production. And it just seems like this was, you know, perhaps the motion picture industry looking at a perfect layup shot here to get a story that could really, really work. Have you followed any of the Hunger Games madness?
Well, I do think it's interesting to look at. You know, it started out as a book and then moved on to the big screen. And, you know, those vampire werewolf movies are kind of in the same boat, and this appeals to the same group of people. So there's been success there, and Hollywood right now is scared to take a risk on any original material. So I think we're going to see this continue. You know, as audiences erode, the studios have to be more and more careful about the money that they're spending. So I think we're going to see all the original content will start in a book. Because a book is a much, you know, you can have all the explosions you want in a book and it's not going to cost you that much money.
Right.
So I think we're going to see more of that. And looking at the numbers, though, from box office, you know, Think Like a Man only brought in $17.6 million, and that was the number one. So it seemed like it was a very soft weekend.
It does.
On the box office. And then, you know, looking at the broadcast shows that came in this week, I think the number one broadcast show was Dancing with the Stars, and number two was American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting there. Both those shows are live shows, right? They're
right.
Tune-in shows, appointment viewing. So the days of having a hit drama be number one are long gone. You know, I think it's not till we get down to number five, Person of Interest.
Right.
That we have something, you know, that is a scripted show. Big Bang coming in number six, NCSI coming in at seven, The Mentalist at number eight, 2020 news show, special edition made it in at number nine, and rounding out the top 10 was Blue Bloods. I haven't seen that one. Have you seen that one?
My wife watches Blue Bloods. She really likes it. I've seen it a couple times. It's a pretty good show, and there's still some good drama on TV, but you know, I think for people that are getting kind of sick of all the reality shows, I mean, again, you look at the top four are all reality based shows that are very low budget comparatively to a drama or something of that nature. So it's clearly where the networks have gone is into the reality space. And I think the live, you know, back to that digital Hollywood discussion, the whole live ecosystem of people talking to each other via Twitter, I'm sure the networks want to get a chunk of that conversation going through their impression-based ad positions, right? I mean, that's something that they're going to want to capture and maybe try to do more with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's they see that as a way to build audiences, to use social media to get people tune in. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you think about walking down the street. If you see a group of people all staring in a window, hey, what are they looking at? Or if, you know, they're all looking at something on the ground, you stop and look. And I think the same thing's happening with social media right now. And, you know, again, the live events kind of played out that way. As far as the top show in cable shows, you know, number 10, the LA Clippers versus Memphis on TNT, a live sporting event. Number 9, Swamp People. Number 8, Legend of Korra. I'm not seeing that show. And then 7, Dallas versus Oklahoma. And then 6, the WWE Entertainment. So right. I guess we had some wrestling.
Yep.
More sporting events. American Pickers at number 5, which is interesting. WWE again at number 4 on USA. And Pawn Stars.
Yeah, that's up there.
The, the third and second spots, which is interesting. I know a lot of kids love that because they learn history at the same time, so that's interesting. And then number one was the NFL draft.
Right.
So again, a sporting event, even though there wasn't any sports played, it's about, you know, picking the people in that.
And I found it interesting that Pawn Stars occupies the 2 and 3 spots on the cable lineup here as far as the top 10. And American Pickers is up in the top 5 also, mainly because people like to watch people pick through other people's trash. it's quite
They're
interesting.
Airing their dirty laundry. Yeah. You know, they go to all those houses where it's just the hoarders live and they've got all the crud everywhere. Right. And it's like, oh, my God, do people really live that way?
And it's like it's one of those things where when you know you have a mess, at least it's not as bad as their mess is. So perhaps there's, there's that psychological thing knowing that you could be far worse than you are. But yep. My wife makes me clean up after myself all the time. What I did find interesting were the top Hulu streams. And, that is significantly different than what we saw with the broadcast components here. So New Girl with Zooey Deschanel is top of the Hulu stream list this week, followed by The Office, Community, Family Guy, Once Upon a Time, Glee, The Daily Show, and Parks and Recreation, rounding out the top 8, I guess, followed by Grey's Anatomy and 30 Rock. It's just totally different. No reality programming kind of dominating Hulu. Maybe there isn't that much on there.
Well, it's interesting because you look at these shows, these are story-based comedies for the most part, with the exception of Grimm and Grey's Anatomy and Revenge. The only one that's topical is The Daily Show. Everything else is got a story to it. It's funny, and all the content is there so you can catch up. And it's not an appointment television, which I think that's what we're going to see broadcast shift to. I mean, you look at radio. You know, radio in the 1930s and 40s was the major form of entertainment. And in the 1950s, you know, TV was the stepchild. It was kind of like YouTube is now. And so we didn't see those formats change until TV really came on strong. And I think with the interactivity of the internet, with the interactivity of the second screens, and as our TVs change, we're going to see a big difference in what's going on with the TV formats. And so broadcast television will change the way that radio changed. I mean, if you'd have told a writer or producer of a TV drama or of a radio drama in the 1950s that in 10 years they'd be out of work, they would have laughed in your face.
Right.
But, I think we're seeing that now to where it's going to change.
And I think, you know, a lot of the things that the print industry has been dealing with will eventually make its way to television as it gets easier to broadcast. We're broadcasting, again, out of my basement. It's not that hard to do. It does take a little bit of expertise. But, you know, as we saw with the web, you know, once a few services come up that make that barrier to entry go down, it gets a lot easier to do some really, really good production quality online. So they need to be looking for that. Now, one thing about YouTube this week that really just confused me, and perhaps I'm just living under a rock, but occupying 3 positions in the space here, I'm going to put it up behind me here, is this, I think it's a Japanese pop band called Girls' Generation. Have you heard of this, Tim? Because you might be up on this stuff, because I'm certainly
not. Actually, I'm not. I am. This is the first that I'm hearing of Girls' Generation. But you know, I've had my head under the live television studio cable network rock the last couple of weeks, so I haven't been up on my YouTube videos.
But I'm quite intrigued by this, and I don't know what to think of it. But I don't understand what's going on. They actually ran a bunch of like 30-second. I mean, just tilt to the left here so people can see it. I'm still struggling with my technology. But they ran like 2 or 3 of these 15 or 17 second little trailers for this music video that was going to come out, and that's been like dominating everything. So it was even ahead of Jimmy Fallon's Obama slow jamming the news. So they're bringing the president's cool factor back. And I would imagine if we look later on this week that the president's appearance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, otherwise known as the Nerd Prom, will probably be bringing in a good amount of traffic too. So it's just
I think so. You know, I mean, Jimmy Fallon seems to be pretty good. He, you know, I think he learned a lot from our buddy Steve Garfield at stevegarfield.com. I think he had him on early on, and Jimmy's really taken to social media and learned a few tricks.
It's the way to do it, and it's I think a lot of these guys, I mean, Conan O'Brien certainly got rehired because of his online following, then he's still pumping some stuff out to the interwebs for us to consume. So that's always a good thing. So that's what's leading us this week. It's been quite a slow week to some degree, but still some interesting content. And I'm going to put you in charge, Tim, of reporting back on what this Girls' Generation thing is all about. Maybe one of our viewers does too. But
yeah, who knows if Goldie joins us, we might be able to get scoop from her. I'm not sure if she's up on it or not. But Freddie Du, Freddie's really popular on YouTube, and he's been doing all kinds of things. I don't know if you're familiar with him, Juan, but
he's
a special effects guru that just has had so much fun with his videos. And he said some interesting things where, you know, when he first started out, it was just about the spectacle. And now his stories are starting to evolve a little bit, but there's still a lot of blow-ups and shoot-em-ups. And the only thing that he can't get too realistic on in his special effects is the blood, because he'll get flagged on YouTube if it's a little
too violent.
Oh, is
that the case? Okay. Yeah, he did have some blood spraying, but perhaps it was not enough to trigger the censors.
I asked him about it, and he said that he has to keep it looking kind of cheesy that it's not realistic.
Okay. So, yeah, and I would say, considering that I'm watching this now, he's shooting fireballs out of his hands at these medieval guards, and I guess that isn't too realistic. So.
Yeah, that's a fun one where, you know, it's he's playing this game as if it's a first person shooter where you can shoot things out of your hand. And I think it's like level 80 of a game. And so they're kind of recreating a segment from a video game in real life.
Right.
So it's fun to look at.
Yeah, the Skyrim game. And what's funny is that so many people are watching it. I guess Skyrim is a pretty popular game, but it's been pretty good. And I think what's funny is with videos like that, people don't realize how hard it is to make this stuff. And this is not easy. You have the tools accessible to you really to make it happen. It's just it does require some expertise to make that work. But kudos to him. He's getting some traffic, and hopefully he's getting some ad revenue from that too. So you want to talk about some ebooks here? Because there's an interesting ebook on the horizon here from George Harrison. I think it just came out, right?
Did you get a chance to check it out? I haven't seen this one. It looks good though, right?
It does look good. It's got a lot of some handwritten notes from, you know, probably from his time during the Beatles development. The ebook, at least the iTunes summary, says it has it's a fascinating life of George Harrison explored via a wealth of photographs, letters, sketches, and memorabilia, and it's almost like a scrapbook that they've put together. It's available on the iTunes bookstore. I believe it's actually also available as a printed book too. So the ebook it does exist in printed form if people want to check it out. I'm showing some screens of it right here right now.
There's also another Beatles ebook, enhanced ebook out, Yellow Submarine, mm-hmm. that is fun. So something you might want to check out.
And I think wasn't that one free for a while? The Yellow Submarine book? It may have been.
Yeah, it was free for a while. It's pretty good.
And I think this is probably one of these breakthrough moments where you've got a really, huge audience now being exposed to perhaps consuming books in a, especially these kind of multimedia books in a different way. And the attempt was made back in the 90s with the CD-ROM, thing where people have tried to convert books that you'd want to read on a tiny CRT monitor. That didn't work out too well. But I think with the iPads being out there, this will certainly make it work. And I think we might have to start buying iPads with more space, because I only bought the 16-gig iPad. But what is it, 2 gigs a book, Tim?
Yeah, that's as much as you can get, is up to 2 gigs. But I talked to the folks at Apple, and they would prefer that you're only like 750 megabytes, because it's a bad user experience if you have to, you know, wait to download and wait for the download. But nonetheless, I'm going to push that 2 gig on mine, and I just think I'll put a warning label there that says, you know, warning, this ebook has a lot of video, it's going to take a long time to download,
but it's worth it.
There you go.
It's worth it.
Worth the wait.
And there was a story in the New York Times that I think really speaks to a market problem that our friends at the Motion Picture Association are dealing with. I've been rather outspoken on SOPA in the past, but this is really about SOPA. It's more about the market. There's a 92-year-old guy in New York who's a veteran of World War II, And he somehow became one of the world's most prolific movie bootleggers for people in the military. And at 92, he has duplicated thousands of bootleg movies. And these are not DVDs that he's ripped and you know, done all the processing with. He's going out and buying bootlegs somewhere in New York, taking those bootlegs, and he's bought a duplicator to make a lot of copies. New York Times, Alan Schwartz wrote about this guy. Doesn't look like he's going to go to jail or anything, but you know, it speaks to the fact that in the story, the MPAA or somebody from the Motion Picture Association is talking about how they transport projectors and reel-to-reels to have soldiers be able to watch movies. Yet it's not enough. Clearly there's a market. This guy's not selling movies to these troops, by the way. He's giving them to the troops for free. But you know, do you think the Motion Picture Association missed an opportunity here? I think, you know, they could have sold these movies to these soldiers, and they certainly buy DVDs all the time.
Yeah, I think it's just a market they're not paying attention to, and this really goes back to piracy overall. You know, if the distribution companies just made it easier to buy the stuff for free, they'd sell a lot more instead of seeing it stolen and worried about it stolen. It's going to be pirated no matter how you make it, no matter how much you protect it. And I think that the protection that people have in place right now is great, but they should spend more time focusing on how they can make it as simple to buy as possible. I mean, a one-click purchase that gets onto something that a soldier can watch, you know, would be great. I think we have Goldie Chan joining us. Hi, Goldie.
Hey.
Hey, Goldie. Thanks for joining us.
So, Goldie, for folks who are listening and watching, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us a quick intro, what you're working on these days.
Sure. I'm a new media strategist, and I work primarily with youth brands. One of them is Adult Swim. And I also am producing branded content, which is very exciting.
And what kind of branded content?
Right now, I'm working on a web series about investment bankers for a site that is primarily visited by investment bankers.
Awesome. That's an interesting niche audience. That speaks to a lot of what changes are out there, right? I mean, you could never really distribute something to investment bankers for investment bankers on cable, right? This is a whole new world.
No. And I find it really funny because this is not a web series. This is not a web show that is geared towards sending out to my friends who might honestly, you know, be a little angry about the subject matter. Mm-hmm. But it's really for investment bankers themselves.
And what kind of things do investment bankers care about? Is it hard to bridge that gap? Do you have to do a lot of research to make that work?
You know what? It was actually, the script was written by an ex-investment banker, and we got a lot of feedback from current investment bankers. So, you know, and there's a lot of technical jargon in there, and they're trying to get the deal of their life done. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
We thank you for joining us. We're actually going through the news, and we were just talking about this 92-year-old guy who, I don't know if you heard about this, but he has been bootlegging Hollywood movies. Buying them at like the street corner bootlegging place, putting them in a UPS box, and he duplicates them. He's got a duplication machine and everything, and he ships them over to troops overseas.
And, oh wow!
Yeah, it's quite a story, and he's probably, you know, apparently the military considers, his name is Mr. Strachman. I have to get his full name here, but he's 92 years old, and he's been doing this. And Tim and I were just talking about just what a missed market opportunity this is for the MPAA. Not that, you know, they would necessarily sell a lot of movies to these soldiers. I mean, he's duplicating several thousand of them. They're probably getting duplicated again and again and again. What does this speak to for distribution? And you know, you're working in a space where people have been often afraid to go. What do you say to people who are fearful of online distribution and selling?
I think it's funny because I see a lot of my peers who are coming from the opposite version of where I'm coming from. I come from a primarily, you know, working in social media my entire career. And it's really interesting because I think online distribution is not scary at all. And you can just reach a very different audience too. I think that you have to be very targeted in who you are trying to sell to, because if you're just trying to make something or distribute to, if you're not trying to sell necessarily, But if you're just being very vague with who your audience is and who that content is actually geared towards, I think that is where a lot of the hiccups come in.
So is it really more about now not the size of the audience, but really the quality of the audience you're trying to reach? That you're focusing on investment bankers. That's a pretty specific
right.
area. So, you know, how do you pitch that? How do you, as an independent content producer, how do you go to someone who's been so used to, you know, looking for a 30 million viewer audience to say, no, you only need to reach 15,000 of these really influential investment bankers, and here's how. How do you pitch that?
You know what? I was very lucky with this project in that we have been talking for a while, and they had really wanted to do something kind of special for their audience base. So they actually really get the hyper-targeted branded content, which is, you know, not something that everyone gets. So I would suggest that if you are trying to pitch something like this that is super, super focused, I would pull out numbers, honestly, and I would pull out spend dollars, and I would pull out some other metrics that might be useful to convince your party that that you are the right person for the job and that your company is the right person for the job, but really that audience is there and they're spending money.
And that's the most important part. They are spending money and it has to go somewhere.
Yes, exactly.
That is exactly it. Well, we were going to continue on our news thing here. You know, Funny or Die has been quite a brand, speaking of brands that have launched online. And I guess it was 5 years ago this month that the clip, and our guests cannot see it playing behind me, but the clip of the landlord where they somehow talked someone into lending them their two-year-old to swear at Will Ferrell over his late rent payments has reached the five-year mark, which is just incredible. So both of you work in this space. Tim, what's the secret to Funny or Die? Was it Will Ferrell and some of the people that they get? Is it good content? You know, how did they make it work? And
yeah,
largely
I
outside
think
of YouTube?
The big win for Funny or Die is that, you know, it started out as Will Ferrell's friends, and then once HBO bought them, they started bringing in everybody, and so having access to that talent pool to do fun skits. I mean, this week Funny or Die launched a PSA for walking. How it's a good idea to walking in. And what did they do? They reassembled the cast of The West Wing. They had them all back, and they shot it on the set as if it was, you know, in the Oval Office, and did a public service announcement that was a web video that, you know, you should go walk. It's healthy. So it's great. I mean, they're just doing fun stuff.
Right.
And it's a playground. You know, it's a great idea where, you know, an actor who wants to act can come in for a couple hours and just be part of something that's a goof.
Right.
And in fact, I heard that actor Jeremy Sisto, is it Sisto, who is on Law and Order, you know, he's always been known as a drama actor. But he did something on Funny or Die, and it got him a series, I think, on ABC, where he plays in a comedy, and that was because of Funny or Die. They were able to go see because he's at that level where he doesn't have to audition anymore for roles. You get to be a big enough actor, you don't go on auditions; they just give you an offer.
Well, I think that's the beautiful thing about Funny or Die, which Tim touched on, which is that these bigger actors can come in and they don't need a huge time commitment. They're not making a short film. They're really just doing a short. So they can just come in for one skit and then they're done, you know, and then they go back and they edit it. And then this person who normally may be a drama actor can come in and do something really funny and comedic. And I'm sure it's a breath of fresh air for them, too.
And to kind of show a side of them, perhaps, that they're not able to pitch to a potential casting director, right? That yeah. You know, you're always a serious, straight-laden actor, and you know, you can't be funny, but sometimes Leslie Nielsen's come out of that, right? So it's a neat thing. What do you say, Goldie, to people that come to you and say, I want the next Funny or Die or the next whatever? I mean, what's the secret sauce that makes this stuff work besides having celebrities if you don't have them available? Or is there none?
You know what? I actually get clients who come to me all the time, potential clients, who come to me all the time. They're like, I want the next big viral video. And I often tell them, you know, viral is just a buzzword, and you can't actually create a viral video until it's viral. Right. And we can talk about all these things that help make a viral video, and I think those are more useful than talking about, you know, making the thing that will be the next honey badger, which we all know about. But I think one of them, which is something that I personally love, my catchphrase that I tell people is pick a winner. Pick a winner before you even start. Pick an audience that is spending money. Pick an audience that is focused and on the internet, because there are still some groups of people, some audiences that are not even really that present on YouTube or on Facebook, or they're present on a certain site, in which case then you should create content specifically tailored for that site and that audience. I'm all about specificity.
Specificity is very important, especially in you're trying to get that granular. Is there research that you look for? What sites do you, or what services do you use to try to figure out where those audiences are?
You know what? It really depends. I have been known to really, you know, I'm old school. I'm old school. So what I do is I actually go in and I go into forums and blogs. I did a project briefly for mommy bloggers. And so what I did was I actually went in and, you know, I found blog rolls of the top 100, 200 mommy bloggers. And I went in and I actually looked at all of their content individually. Which is very time consuming. So if you don't have that kind of time, there are sites out there that will aggregate data for you. But I honestly believe that the best way to do it is to still go in and check out what individuals who are influencers in the space are saying. And you know, go ahead and talk with them. Say, hey, I have this project that I'm kind of considering. What do you think? You know, is this something you'd actually watch, or you'd want to, you would feel that Pampers is really not, you know, the idea that Pampers has isn't really a great idea, and you wouldn't want to see this content. I don't know. I always think it doesn't hurt to ask some targeted people.
So there's not some magic SEO firm you can just hire and all the data just kind of flutters down, right? This is real work. To get it to work.
You know what? I think that there are plenty of very fine SEO companies out there that are doing some good work. But I just don't think that there's ever magic sauce. You know, there's plenty of shorts on Funny or Die that really don't get any views ever. So I think you just have
That's the die part. See, it's either funny
or die. Right?
Exactly. So if anybody's been on Funny or Die, you see that rotten, the fresh, or what is it? I'm getting this completely wrong now. How embarrassing. Tim, what is it? It is the, yes, that's right. It's the Funny or Die.
Yep.
It's that meter.
That's
I think
right.
You have rotten and fresh.
Rotten tomatoes.
Rotten tomatoes.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the next news story, if I can find it on my beta note, show notes here. We're very beta here. This is like the new alpha is beta. Story number four is, we talked a little bit about this earlier, is the TV-driven social media interaction that's becoming popular among U.S. viewers. How many of us sit at our TV screens with our iPads out tweeting about the live event that is unfolding? Broadcast engineering is talking about, you know, will viewers take advantage of tools that are designed specifically for that? I think what we've seen with Twitter is that Twitter, the users largely directed where the whole service went. In fact, many of the conventions of the service went where the users decided it wanted to go. And the question is, and Tim was at Digital Hollywood exploring this, can these networks be successful at trying to invent their own essentially content or social media networks to discuss what's going on in their shows? So let me start with Tim, and then we'll hand it over to Goldie.
Well, I think, you know, what you're seeing happen in the marketplace is that a lot of networks that have been doing stuff in the cable world are now testing the waters and dipping their toe in the waters in terms of live television on connected devices. So if you look at Wall Street Journal Live, it's a free iPad app that you can download onto your iPad. They're doing about 5 hours of live programming a day. There's a lot of VOD there. And so if you're a day trader, this is a great application. You can also watch it on your Apple TV. And I think there may be some other platforms that they'll be launching soon. But that's something that doesn't exist. It's a new type of digital channel. Fox News on Roku, that's another one where they're testing the waters in this space as well. And so they're getting quite a lot of traction there. People are watching a lot of video there. They're consuming it live. It's information that's valuable to people. And I think we're going to see more of that type of thing happening. John Petricelli from AEG Digital talked about it quite a bit at Digital Hollywood. John's company, AEG, does live streaming events. They've done the Grammys. They've done the Oscars. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. And, Goldie was also at Digital Hollywood.
And so, Goldie, what do you think about this whole notion of the social viewing angle that a lot of networks are trying to take? We're seeing everyone trying to find some way to capture all that traffic on their own systems. And how do smaller niche audiences work in this environment? It's hard. It's hard for a little publisher like me to get my stuff front and center on Roku. So what do you suggest?
Well, I think if that's always the goal, of course, is to get it across a site that has a lot of eyes on it. But I also think that it is maybe easier to use pre-existing free options like starting a hashtag on Twitter. And I heard this actually really great suggestion that my friend gave me, and she runs a very popular web series in Canada. But she said that whenever they have production meetings, they actually hashtag their production meetings. So you can actually watch the process of them creating, episode 2 and talking about the difficulties that go into creation. And a lot of people are really fascinated by that. So if you don't have that audience yet for, say, your series in particular, you might attract some people who are interested in just production in general. And one of the things that we've been doing with our investment banker project, which is called Cost of Capital, you guys should all check out our Facebook page, is we've been actually talking with some finance bloggers as well because, we're trying to reach out. So I think a lot of it is actually just reaching out to some qualified individuals who will be able to talk about, hopefully, what you're doing and if they like it.
Right.
And I think that's actually a really good way to start gaining that momentum. So that way, then you can kind of approach the bigger dogs and ask them, and show them what you've been doing and say, hey, we have all these people behind us because we're awesome.
Right. So it pays to be awesome.
It pays to be awesome.
And Tim, I see our next guest just joined us. You want to introduce him to our viewers?
Sure. Yeah. Bernie Hsu, Streamy Award winning writer for the series Compulsions. And Bernie has a new hit show on YouTube. Bernie, welcome. Can you tell us about your show?
Let me make sure. Can you hear me?
We can hear you great.
Yes, we can hear you.
All right, good. So the new show I'm working on, and I actually am supposed to release an episode within like 2 hours from now. It's called The Lizzie Bennett Diaries, and it is at youtube.com/Lizzie Bennett, Lizzie with an IE, and Bennett with two N's and one T. It is an adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, told through the vlog format, and we also integrate a lot of interactive elements. So there's a lot of transmedia. All the characters have social media destinations, and that's all doing very well for us. And so far, I think we've just crossed 600,000 views in a month. With no PR and no media buying, and we have 40,000 subscribers. So I mean, in context, I would say it's a hit. In the grand scheme of the internet, I'd say we still have ways to go.
Sure. So how did it come about, Bernie? What was the the starting point for this series, and what were some of the hurdles that you went into in getting it up, and what do you think got you so many views?
Well, I guess the first thing was my partner in the project, Hank Green, who's a big YouTube personality, runs VidCon. He's part of the Vlog Brothers. He's the one who came to me and really recruited me to be the showrunner of the series, because he's not a writer. Well, he's not a screenwriter. I mean, he's a writer, but he's not a storyteller writer. And he asked me about how it would be possible. And so, of course, there's questions of Pride and Prejudice is a period piece. Period pieces tend to be expensive because of all the costuming. And then Pride and Prejudice is also a third-person novel. And so, and then now we're trying to tell it first-person. So you have to have The first question I asked him was like, can we not make it period? Because that would solve a lot of problems, you know, budget and everything. And then he wanted to make it interactive, of course. And okay, if it's period, like there's no camera in like in the 1800s. So you can't really have her interact and make it believable if it's period. So there's stuff like that. And then, so he was the one who kind of really spearheaded the project. And I just was with him all the way. I was like, hey, I'm with you. I think this is a fascinating idea. I love innovation and storytelling, so I would love to be the guy who to kind of take this as far as I can take it, and put the team together. Wrote the Bible. Wrote the first episode, and kind of hired some writers to help me with it to give me a little more estrogen cred for the subject matter, and so that was the how it kind of came about. I mean, like. You think if you watch the show, it's like it's a pretty simple show. It's a girl speaking in front of the camera. I say that way. I'm seeing Goldie in front of my camera. Like it's similar to that in a sense, but there's certainly more involved elements to it. And you take that and you think, oh, that's really easy to do. And I'm like, sure, that part's easy to do. But we spent 6-7 months developing the series, like with weekly Skype calls, not unlike this, and just like talking for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half about different elements of the show. It's like which characters do we do? What's the modernization of this character like? You know, what's the modern equivalent of the ball? Like what's a ball in this era, right? Stuff like that. And so 6-7 months later, we finally, you know, and then we started casting. When we launched on April 9th, so we're not even a month in, we knew that there was going to be two things happening. One is that Hank can push his audience over, and Hank's audience, he has a 90,000 Twitter followers, and however many of them are active, you know, it's up to you to decide. He's got 500,000, 600,000 YouTube subscribers, but his videos really only get about 150,000 to 200,000 views per video, so that's more of an accurate number. And we figured, like, you know, how many of them would actually come over to see it, you know? So that was his push. And then we did one article at Tube Filter, which Mashable picked up, which really gave us a lot of legs, to be honest with you. When Tube Filter wrote it, then Mashable picked it up, and then it just kind of, it was a very buzzy concept, Pride and Prejudice on YouTube. Whether or not you think that's a good idea or a bad idea, it's still buzzy. You know, like, you go, what? Right? And so that was really what got us our discovery. And it kind of shocked me. I mean, I come from advertising, and I really didn't think we would get that much discovery so fast because of those two pieces of traction. And I asked him, like, hey, what do you think we're going to do first week? You've been on YouTube for 6 years, you tell me, right? And he's like, very, very optimistic guess, 40,000 an episode first week. So 2 episodes a week, 40,000 an episode. And we got, I think we got to 100,000 by not even a weekend total. So we were like, you know, doubling almost our expectations. And I actually say that 40,000 was cumulative, not each episode.
Gotcha.
That he thought.
Do you think, I mean, since it's a vlog series, are you going to play it all in the live space? Will you be using Google Hangouts?
See, that's dangerous because of the, you know, it's a scripted series, and I think our strength, I mean, this is part of my job, but I think the strength of the series is one, the writing, and then two, the performances. So, if you make it live, you're just, there's a lot of hurdles to jump through to kind of make sure that you're keeping that same experience, and the same level of quality in the performances into a live, performance. So, I mean,
30 Rock went live.
Yeah, I mean that's live, sure. But then if you make it like live for us, you would have to do it like we're doing it here and make it interactive. You know,
right?
If we did ours live, we would be interactive. 30 Rock doesn't have to be interactive. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea. I think it's going to be one of those things where we decide and talk about for you know, in development. I love
very cool. And where can people check out the show again?
It's youtube.com/LizzieBennett, LizzieBennett. And she has, and that links to several different in personality domain destinations, Facebook, Twitter, etc. You can also just go to LizzieBennett.com and follow the story as like an out of world, we call it.
So that's a great way to catch up.
And it's a great way to catch up. You just click on the story tab and boom, you can see every story element, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, Tumblrs, videos, and I'm missing one, but it's all there in chronological order. You can follow, catch up really quickly.
Great. Bernie, I'm curious, what movies, TV shows are you looking forward to this weekend, this upcoming week?
Well, there's the one on my head, which is The Avengers. I have midnight tickets, I think, tonight.
I don't know if you guys heard about it, but I think it's at the Arclight, which is here in L.A. They're showing all of the movies before The Avengers, so you can go watch Iron Man, and you could go watch The Hulk, and your brain will be goo, but you can watch them all sequentially, I guess, before you even go in and see The Avengers, which I think is I think over the course of one day is a lot, but that would have been cool if they had spread it out over a week. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's tough. You go to more, like when I go to Sundance and I watch 6 movies in a day, I have trouble keeping them all apart.
Oh, yeah. And you're tramping around in the snow usually in your jumper, you know.
Yes, I have a jumper. Yes, I do.
Can you wear that next show, Tim?
Yes, I will. Absolutely. No. Powder, baby blue, powder blue jumper. It's awesome.
You name it. Well, I think we're running out of time, so I wanted to thank everyone for joining us. This was great. I think it really was a fun way to bring people in. It was almost like having like a little late night show where people just come in and sit down at the couch and everyone's interacting. So it's terrific. So I do want to go through our guests. Goldie, where can people find you?
They can find me everywhere on the internet, but mostly you can actually find me more accurately on Twitter. So find me at Goldie Chan.
We will do that. And Bernie?
Just my name, Bernie Su, BERNIESU, at pretty much every destination. I have the Facebook, I have Twitter, I have the .com. So that is where you can find me.
Terrific. And Tim?
Just Google Tim Street.
That's it. The one and only.
Then you'll see all my arrest records, everything.
Your life's an open book in this social world, right?
So, absolutely.
Great. Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's see. What can we dig up?
No, let us Google this.
Yeah, right. Let's just Google it. And I'm Lon Seidman. You can find me at LONSEIDMAN on Twitter. I'm involved with way too many things these days, so you can just follow it all there. It's a big mashup. So I want to thank everyone for joining us on our beta episode of Behind the Video. We're going to review the tape, work out some kinks, and we'll be back again hopefully next week too. And really want to thank our guests for bearing with us, and for Tim for bearing with my science experiment down here in my basement. So
I love it, man.
It's coming together.
Mission control.
Your basement looks great.
Thank you. It looks better from on the other camera, but we're still trying to get Google to let us into the Hangout Club. So,
yeah, we want to get into what's the Google Hangout thing called?
It's called Hangouts on Air. That's what we want. So if anyone from Google is listening, and I hope they are, we want that. And then it'll make my life a lot easier because I could push less buttons.
All right.
That's cool. It. Well, thank you, everyone. This show is a wrap, and we will be back behind the video next week. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.